Sunchaser sat in the starlit darkness at the edge of the water, both knees drawn up, his elbows braced on them. He'd been here for three hands of time. He had eaten nothing since they'd left the old OtterClan village, for fear that his aching stomach would heave any food right back up. Dread writhed like a living creature inside him, twisting and turning. 100 hands away, Kestrel knelt before a fire that had burned down to wavering red coals. She'd laid out their hides and fixed dinner and tea, all in utter silence, leaving him be. She snugged an elk hide over her shoulders and unlaced the front of her dress. She lifted Cloud Girl to her breast and patted the baby absently as she nursed.
What game are we playing, Mammoth Above? You can do with me as you wish, but Kestrel doesn't deserve this. All she wants is a home.
They'd camped on a narrow spit of sand out in the open. Mother Ocean surrounded them on three sides, undulating restlessly. A few pale lavender blossoms of seaside daisy thrust up from the sand, but nothing else grew out here. Wind Girl stalked the beach vigilantly, hungry for prey. She clawed at Sunchaser's clothing with icy fingers, trying to shake sense into him, to warn him. But Sunchaser needed no warning. He understood the signs clearly. Mammoth Above had brought Kestrel to him. Mammoth Above had driven the OtterClan away so that he would be forced to stay with Kestrel, because Mammoth Above knew what was happening to him. The strength of his feelings shocked him. He had known Kestrel for such a short time, yet it seemed that she'd filled his dreams forever. He ran a hand through his hair and shook his head. Sunchaser turned to look at Helper. The dog lay behind him, his head on his paws, watching the world through huge brown eyes. A fuzz of black hair had begun to grow in his mangy spots.
Why didn't you stop this, Helper? Isn't that why you're here? To keep me on the path? To remind me of my duty to the spirit powers?
Helper's eyelids drooped, half opened, drooped again, and closed. He flopped over on his side. Sunchaser scratched his ears.
Spirit Helper, can't you even stay awake when I'm talking to you?
When Cloud Girl had finished nursing, Kestrel tucked her between two soft elk hides and spoke to her softly for a time. Sunchaser saw Kestrel bend over to kiss her daughter's forehead. Then Kestrel stood and glanced between Cloud Girl and Sunchaser, clearly trying to decide whether or not to disturb him. She resolutely walked out across the cool sand. With his heart in his throat, Sunchaser watched her approach. She took her time, her arms folded over her chest to block the wind. When she stood in front of him, she hesitated before kneeling to face him.
What is it, Kestrel?
Could I talk with you?
Of course.
Sunchaser, I'm frightened. I fear that you may hate me because I...
No, I don't hate you.
But you don't hate me nearly as much as I hate myself. I know I'm a burden to you. I'm keeping you from dreaming. I really don't understand why we've been thrown together, but...
But we have been.
Yes, and that's the problem, isn't it?
It is.
I'm so sorry.
Kestrel rose and gazed down at him with wounded eyes.
I'm leaving tomorrow, Sunchaser. I can find OtterClan Village by myself. That way you won't have to worry about anything. I want you to go back to dreaming. I have the feeling that that's the only thing that's really important. And I've been keeping you from it. I know that. I regret it very much. Please, don't hate me for distracting you.
Kestrel, I told you, I don't...
Before Kestrel could turn and run, Sunchaser grabbed the fringes of her hem. He tugged lightly.
Kestrel!
Sunchaser, please, let me go.
No. I can see that you're right. We need to talk. Sit down here beside me. Please.
She stiffly fell to her knees. A grudging action. She refused to meet his eyes, keeping her gaze fixed instead on the sand.
Sort of a half-sit, eh?
I'm here.
Yes, you are.
He let go of her dress and gave her leg a comforting pat.
Thank you.
Drawing up both knees, he wrapped his arms around them.
I'd like to be honest with you. Would it be all right if I am?
I would appreciate it very much.
This is difficult for me.
I know you're upset, Sunchaser. I know I'm the reason. All day long, I've been wishing I were dead so I wouldn't be causing you this pain.
Looking at her young, guilt-ravaged face, Sunchaser felt very, very old. A tender ache swelled in his heart.
Kestrel, I think you know that I have come to love you, but...
I'm sorry, Sunchaser. I never meant...
But that isn't what's worrying me. I could have overcome my feelings for you. At least I think I could. Let's just say that dreamers have had thousands of cycles in which to devise ways. What worries me is that apparently I'm supposed to feel this way about you.
Why?
I'm not sure.
I thought such things were bad for dreamers.
Usually they are. Some dreamers can manage responsibilities to both family and power, but they're very rare.
Sunchaser, why would Mammoth Above throw an obstacle in your path when you're trying so hard to save her children?
Are you an obstacle, Kestrel?
What else could I be? I mean, I thought...
I've been trying to answer that question all day. Mammoth Above has gone to great lengths to assure that you and I will be together for several more days. She's my spirit helper. I trust her. But I don't understand this. The only reason I can see for Mammoth Above to chance it is that you or your daughter can help me to solve the problem I'm having with my dreaming. Forcing us together is very dangerous for Mammoth Above. She could lose me. She knows that, and I don't think she wants to.
You have been so kind to us, Sunchaser. I would do anything to help you, but I don't know how I can help you dream. And Cloud Girl is just a baby. What could she do?
Please try to think, Kestrel. Perhaps I'm wrong about Cloud Girl. Maybe there's something you know or do that ties you to power. It could be as simple as weaving nets or...
I paint! The only times I feel power moving through me, Sunchaser, are when I'm painting or dying. It must be that.
Will you paint for me, Kestrel? I think I need you to very much.
It would give me great pleasure, but...
Kestrel squeezed his hand gently, her brow furrowed.
Sunchaser, please tell me what you're thinking about Cloud Girl. A few days ago, you said you thought you knew why we'd been drawn together. I didn't ask you to explain at the time. I was too frightened. What did you mean?
Sunchaser moved his fingers over the smooth, tanned skin of her hand.
Do your people in the Marsh Country know of the Steel's Light People?
No. Who are they?
Special messengers of above old men. They live on the roof of the world, the highest mountain peaks. The power of above old man enters our world through the hands of the Steel's Light People. We, that is my clan, the Steel's Light Clan, keep small figurines of each of the Steel's Light People in our home lodges to serve as portals for the real people's power. That way, the Steel's Light People can speak to us, direct us, help us when we are sick or in trouble. But sometimes... Sometimes the people ride lightning bolts down from the roof of the world and walk among humans without anyone's knowledge. They can even choose to enter a woman's womb and be born again.
You think she... that my little girl?
I don't know. But she might be.
What would that mean?
It would mean that I've been given a very great gift, and one that I haven't the slightest idea of how to appreciate.
Oxbalm studied the charcoal lines through narrowed eyes. They wove in and around, crossed over each other, backtracked. Some of them even shot outward from the body of the maze and tied themselves in intricate knots. Horror throbbed in his breast. All morning long, the thunder beings had been restless, angry. They crowded the skies, rumbling and throwing bolts of lightning about within the clouds. The scent of snow rode the breeze. Oxbalm had never liked Catch Straw, but he'd never thought the man capable of this. Especially not when they needed Sunchaser so badly. Oxbalm started to rise, and Horseweed and Balsam took his arms, supporting him as he struggled to his feet. He studied the top of the hill where the village sat. He had asked Catch Straw to help Sumac design the lodge paintings, to keep him busy while Oxbalm investigated Horseweed's whispered accusations. Not that he had doubted his grandson, he hadn't. But such things required delicacy, corroboration, and great courage.
We must say nothing about this. Not to anyone. Not yet. Do you both understand?
Yes, Grandfather. But how long can we wait before we take action? We can't let this go on.
No, we can't. But remember, he has followers, and they all know that I don't like him. We must wait for an opening before we accuse him. Witchcraft is very dangerous, frightening. A rash action, or one too soon, could bring terrible disaster down on us.
How long, Grandfather? How long can Sun Chaser wait?
Only Mammoth above knows the answer to that question. We must pray that Sun Chaser has been able to fend off this monstrous attack.
And if he hasn't?
Then we must end it quickly.
Horseweed and Balsam exchanged a frightened look, and Horseweed's gaze scoured the trees and sky.
Grandfather, what if Catstraw has learned how to change himself into a condor, or other animals? What will that mean once we bring charges of witchcraft against him?
Then we are in worse trouble than we think. Much worse.
The sun had slipped through the opening on the horizon and entered the land of the dead, but whispers of its brilliance flitted across the surface of the ocean and reddened the specks of clouds that dusted the deep blue. Tannin stood, with his atlatl gripped in both hands, watching Lambkill pillage the abandoned OtterClan village. His brother reached down, picked up a clamshell atlatl hook, and tucked it into his shirt pocket. Lambkill walked across the sand and jerked a long pole from a pile of deadfall. He tested its strength and then thrust the pole up into one of the tree burials. Lambkill levered the burial out of the tree, letting the rotting corpse tumble limply onto the sand, spilling maggots and grave goods helter-skelter.
Lambkill, no, no!
Heedless, his brother dislodged another burial, and a little girl's corpse fell headfirst onto the ground.
No.
Lambkill kicked the brightly decorated burial wrapping apart, unconcerned with the putrid reek of death and corruption. The child's head lolled amidst a disarray of long black hair that came loose in patches.
Here!
Lambkill picked up a carved ivory doll.
This is worth a fortune inland!
Tannin fell to his knees, his sleeve draped over his nose to block the stench. The little girl's body lay hunched and stiff, half desiccated. The empty eye sockets, long picked clean by ravens and gulls, stared accusingly up at Tannin. The flesh around her mouth had dried into a death's moan. Lambkill stopped suddenly and knelt down.
Oh, look here, my brother. See these prints? We have her!
Father Sun, a fiery orange ball in a smooth blue sky, gleamed through the canopy of trees over Kestrel's head. Where the sun pierced the thick branches above, damp logs on the ground steamed. Ghostly wisps of fog filled the forest. Kestrel's moccasins cut a meandering swath through the grass as she skirted the meadow and headed down the slope toward the beach. She still needed to gather lichen for the rich yellow that would be the focal point of her design. She hurried, afraid that Sunchaser would be waiting for her. He'd told her that he wanted to sweat and chant until noon. After that, they would begin. She would paint, and he would dream. Anxiety gnawed within Kestrel's belly, the way porcupine chewed on wintershed antlers. She had been feeling strange all day, jumping every time a squirrel chittered. She wanted so much to help Sunchaser. But could she? The possibility of failure terrified her.
You don't even know for certain what the problem with his dreaming is. What did he say during the ant ordeal? Something about the maze?
All night long, she had been designing her painting with that in mind. But if she guessed wrong, her painting might make things worse for him.
Be sure, Kestrel. You must be sure. Colors hold power. They come from the very soul of Sister Earth. Some of my paintings come to life.
With Cloud Girl's sack bouncing against her back, Kestrel stepped over a rotting log and knelt in a lush bed of ferns before a granite boulder wedged between two towering fir trees. The grayish-green leaves of lichen covered the rock.
When my paintings come to life, the spirits in them grow minds of their own. No one can predict what such spirits will do.
Kestrel unlaced the pack around her waist and drew out a chert scraper the size of her palm. The lichen adhered to the stone like boiled pine sap, forcing Kestrel to gouge, cut, and scrape for a full finger of time before she had enough of the leathery plant to fill half of her pack. Lacing up the pack, she stepped out of the ferns and trotted toward the game trail that led downhill. When she emerged from the trees, the salty sea breeze hit her, rich with the scents of smoke and boiling paints. They'd moved their camp from the spit of sand to the edge of the trees so that Sunchaser could set up his sweat lodge in a sheltered location. They'd constructed it at dawn, making a round frame from pine saplings, then covering the small frame with the hides they used for bedding. The lodge nestled in the middle of a small grove of aspens, whose new green leaves quaked and rustled in the wind. In front of the lodge, a bed of hot coals lay covered with rocks. Kestrel could see that Sunchaser had removed several of the rocks. Using sticks as tongs, he would have picked them off and carried them inside, placing them in the pit dug in the floor of the sweat lodge. Water sprinkled over the hot stones would produce the steam. To the right of the sweat lodge, a large flat rock lay tilted slightly toward the sea. At its base, Helper lay on his side in the thick grass, watching Kestrel with his pointed ears cocked. She went directly to the fire, where her paints were boiling. She had collected large clamshells, heated them, and mixed her ingredients with the fat from the rabbit she'd snared and eaten for breakfast. Sunchaser hadn't eaten or drunk anything since yesterday. Kestrel unslung Cloud Girl's sack and gently propped her daughter up against Sunchaser's pack beside their rolled-up hides, the only two left after making the sweat lodge.
I have to tend to my paints, baby. Be good for me.
Cloud Girl chewed her fist as Kestrel knelt before the fire. A few hands of time later, when Kestrel was done making her paint, Sunchaser ducked through the door flap and stood naked against the background of spring leaves. A sheen of sweat coated his sun-bronzed skin. Beads of water glistened on his white hair and braid. For a brief instant, Kestrel allowed her gaze to linger on the curving muscles covering his tall body. The blue and green serpent tattoo on his chest gleamed. When he turned to look at her, his deep-set eyes appeared blacker than she had ever seen them before, like caves in moonglow.
Are you ready, Kestrel?
Yes. Where do you want to sit?
Here, in the aspen grove.
While he went about tying on his breech clout and climbing up on the low rock, Kestrel carried Cloud Girl and her paints over. By the time she got into position, Sunchaser sat cross-legged on the rock, eyes closed, back straight. Helper had curled up before the sweat lodge, 10 hands away. His knowing gaze rested on Sunchaser. Kestrel hung Cloud Girl's rabbit fur sack on the closest tree and turned back to gaze at him. Spears of sunlight penetrated the leaves and dappled his hair and face with a wavering golden patchwork. She understood why so many people spoke his name in their prayers. His handsome face had a soothing peacefulness, as though the sweat bath had washed him clear down to his soul. Power radiated from him like water from a spring. The hair at the nape of her neck prickled. Despite her awe, fear stirred within. Not fear of him, but for him.
How many people have ever seen you cry, Sunchaser, or heard you talk about loneliness? Please, Mammoth above, let him find his way through the maze.
Quietly, Kestrel climbed up beside Sunchaser and arranged her paint shells near her right hand. Sunchaser smelled pleasantly of mint. He must have thrown a few sprigs into his water bowl before he poured it on the hot rocks. She folded the hem of her dress to cushion her knees from the gritty bite of the granite and waited. The thin white trunks of the aspens clustered around them, seeming to lean inward as though eager and anxious about the happenings below. In the distance, the spit of sand where they had camped last night pointed out into the water like a narrow finger. A flock of black and white auks floated near the tip, diving for squid and small fish. Sunchaser bowed his head. Kestrel saw his shoulder muscles contract.
Kestrel?
I'm here, Sunchaser.
Have you ever seen someone dream before?
No. Except in the ant ordeal.
This will be different. Don't be afraid. I may not awaken for days because I'm trying so hard to find my way. You understand?
Yes.
He extended a hand around behind him, and Kestrel took it between her hands and squeezed hard.
Dream well, Sunchaser. I'll do my best for you.
I know you will.
Kestrel released his hand, and he closed his fingers slowly, as though to hold the feel of her with him for a time longer. Finally, he pulled his hand back to his lap and began dreaming. Kestrel dipped the first two fingers of her right hand into the black paint, warm and oily.
All right, Kestrel. Picture the design in your mind. It is a tree, but the branches circle around, like segments of the maze that Sunchaser carved into the floor of the rock shelter. Yes. Yes, that's it.
She put her left hand on Sunchaser's shoulder and began painting with her right hand. At her gentle touch, a brief shudder went through him. Across his lower back, Kestrel carefully painted the trunk and the three branches sprouting from it. The two outside branches curved up like stubby buffalo horns, but the center branch slithered like a snake, swaying sinuously, first up, then down, veering off at a tangent, then to the left, then to the right. Kestrel sat back to examine her work, and her hide skirt spread around her in a fringed halo. She cleaned the black paint from her fingers by rubbing them on the rock. The rest of the painting would be far more difficult to do. The segments of branches had to connect and disconnect at just the right places, and she would have to create an ending, praying that her artistry didn't somehow confuse Sunchaser's soul. As she dipped her fingers into the red paint, a bird flew down to sit on a branch over Helper's head. A red-breasted nuthatch. Such a beautiful bird. Blue-gray above, it had a rust-colored breast and a bold black eye stripe. Kestrel smiled. She lifted her fingers again and noticed that the flock of auks that had been floating near the sand spit had waddled to the edge of the aspen grove and were craning their necks to watch. Helper studied the bird suspiciously, one eye half open. When Kestrel touched Sunchaser to draw the next segment of the maze, a tingle invaded her fingers. His body radiated warmth. She jerked her hand back reflexively.
Where are you, Sunchaser? Already on the path? Is that what the animals sense?
She lowered her fingers again to draw the sinuous red lines, then the white. Kestrel concentrated so hard on creating the correct interplay of red and white lines that she didn't even notice the changing slant of the daylight. Father-son methodically journeyed across the belly of Brother Sky until his body wedded with Mother Ocean's. At the joining point, a swath of light flooded outward, turning the surface of the water to molten gold. Kestrel lowered her hand to the cool granite to watch the glory. The high, wispy clouds blazed like fire-engulfed spider webs. A sound made Kestrel tense. She spun around, and her eyes widened. How long had they been there? A mammoth calf lay on its side in the lush grass, his trunk securely twined around his mother's. The cow met Kestrel's gaze with equanimity, but dark emotion stirred the brown depths of her eyes. Like a chill breeze on a warm day, Kestrel sensed the mammoth's fear.
He's trying, Mother. He really is. He's walking the maze right now, trying to get to the land of the dead so he can help you.
The cow tilted her huge head as though listening. She took a step forward, stopping no more than six hands from Kestrel, looming over her. A person never really understood how big a mammoth was until she looked up at one. The cow's musky scent filled the air, and the sun's dying light burned redly in the long hair that clothed her 28-hand-tall body. Mud caked the blunt feet that rested so easily on the ground. Kestrel was so close that she could see flakes of skin peeling on the front of the cow's long trunk.
How is Sunchaser doing, Mother? Is he all right?
The cow gracefully knelt on her front knees, then lowered the rest of her body to the ground beside her calf. Her left front foot pressed against the rock upon which Kestrel and Sunchaser sat. Grass stained the curve of her short tusks.
Can you help Sunchaser, Mother? He needs all the help he can get.
The cow flapped her ears lazily, but that burning brightness remained a light in her wizened eyes. On the opposite side of the rock, the auks had bedded down with their necks stretched across each other's backs. The nuthatches sat on their branches, their feathers fluffed out. The breeze stilled, and the aspen leaves ceased their soft rattling. All were waiting. The whole world was waiting. Kestrel uneasily turned back to her paints. The lichen had steeped to a flaming gold tinged with the barest hint of green. She brought the shell closer and set it by her knee, then closed her eyes again and saw her design. This part had to be perfect. She could risk no mistakes.
Yellow, for you, Sun Chaser.
Yellow would outline the twisting route that led to the heart of the maze. When completed, the path would resemble serpentine flashes of lightning. Yes, that was it. To help light the way for Sun Chaser. Kestrel opened her eyes and lowered her fingers to the paint. But as she began to chart the circuitous route around the edges of the maze, she caught movement from the corner of her eye. The mammoth cow's dark gray trunk eased up over the edge of the rock and tenderly coiled around Sunchaser's bare foot, holding it in a lover's grasp. Kestrel looked down and smiled. The cow had tilted her massive head sideways, mashing down the tall grass so that she could see Sunchaser's face. Her short tusks gleamed. The calf had shifted, falling asleep near the cow's hind legs, sprigs of fern sticking out of his mouth. Sunchaser didn't seem to feel the cow's touch. His breathing had become so shallow that Kestrel could barely discern the rise and fall of his broad chest. Anxiety tickled her stomach. How long would he be dreaming? All night? For days? There were so many things she wanted to tell him. So many things she feared. But they would have to wait, at least until he had talked to Wolfdreamer and knew better where his path led. Kestrel lifted her fingers to finish the route that led to the heart of the maze. But when she touched Sunchaser, her hand froze.
Oh!
The mammoth cow lifted her head. Helper stood with the hair on his back bristling. Kestrel felt it too. A fluttering like velvet wings at the edges of her soul. A tremor shook her as power flowed into her from all directions, creeping from the trees and animals, from the rock she sat upon, from the very air itself. She had never felt it so strongly before. Like a frostbitten foot thrust into warm water, the sensation grew more painful as moments passed. It seeped upward and inward from her fingers and toes until it enshrouded her whole body in a tingling cocoon.
Blessed spirits!
With difficulty, Kestrel concentrated on finishing her painting. Her hand shook as she threaded the yellow strand through the red segments, around the black and between the white lines. It required painstaking attention not to cross over, not to smudge any of the maze's colors. When at last she'd reached the center of the tree, the heart of the maze, Kestrel's arm ached so badly that she could barely hold it up. Darkness had settled like a hazy charcoal veil upon the land. Kestrel lowered her arm. Helper crept closer to within four hands of the mammoth cow and stared knowingly at Kestrel. Then his gaze shifted to the painting on Sunchaser's broad back.
What do you think, Helper?
The dog wagged its tail. Kestrel shivered in the chill breeze that rustled through the aspens. She would have to build a fire soon. But for a short while, she wanted to sit and stare at her artistry. The sense of lightness ran like spring breezes through her blood. It felt so good to be painting again, as though a severed limb had been miraculously reattached to her body. The bright colors formed a glorious picture, the strands winding in and out and around each other. Already she could feel the first stirrings of life in the painting. Catchstraw didn't breathe. He sat stone still, watching, listening. The distorted maze at his feet had been forgotten. The swooping creatures observed him with unblinking eyes as they soared through the trees. Moonlight reflected blindingly from the translucent membranes of their dragonfly wings. They had come upon him suddenly, invading his forest sanctuary like quills shot from a terrified porcupine. Since he no longer had a private lodge, he'd been forced to move his secret activities out into the open. He couldn't risk lighting a fire, so he'd been working the maze in darkness. And the thunder beings seemed drawn to his activities like thirsty beasts to water. Perhaps because he'd done so well tonight. Twisting the path like a knot of screw bean vines, stretching some runners out into linking interwoven spirals. The thunder beings dove at him. Were they angry, trying to frighten him away? They streaked through the forest like silver darts, coming close enough to rip off his head with their talons.
You're so beautiful.
The human faces glared down at him. They looked like children of no more than 5 summers. Some of them had the fat faces of infants, and their wings. The smallest stretched a single body's length, but the largest spanned 5 or 6 body lengths. How could they maneuver so gracefully through the dense forest? The thunder beings had magical souls. How had he summoned them? The more Catchstraw became entranced by their motions, the more his mouth gaped.
It must be the nightshade.
He had found the purple flower at the edge of the meadow in the dry, rocky places beneath the oaks. Though he'd never seen the plant before, he had recognized it immediately from Running Salmon's description. How wise he'd been to demand that Oxbalm take the village into the foothills. He'd found 6 new spirit plants, and he wanted to try every one of them. When Catchstraw had first seen the purple nightshade, he'd dug it up, roots and all. Then he'd begun experimenting. First the blossoms, then the leaves. Tonight he'd ground the roots and mixed a small amount with his tea. The plant's deadly spirit must have allowed him to call to the thunder beings.
What power!
He'd intended to change himself into a short-faced bear tonight and go hunting, but he'd lost his body somewhere in the first moments of glory. Now he seemed to be floating off of the forest floor, suspended between the worlds of earth and sky.
I feel like a tiny thunder being cocooned in clouds, feeding off of the rain. Maybe. Is that why you came? You want me to become one of you?
The thought had never occurred to him, but why not? He floated higher and higher until he looked over the tops of the trees. Against the star people, the flights of the thunder beings wove a flaming web of light. It resembled a net, caging...
Caging?
The dream tattered like sun-warmed mist. He awoke with his face buried in the tall grass of the forest floor. Terrified, he flopped onto his back to look up. The thunder beings had vanished. A huge amber halo encircled the crescent of a bubbled man that hung over the eastern horizon.
What happened? Why did I fall? I wanted to fly. Come back, all of you. I want to be one of you. I'm tired of becoming animals. Give me wings!
Silver eyes coalesced from the glitters of moonlight scattered in the forest.
Oh, there you are. I thought you'd gone. You hate me, don't you? Well, I don't care. You hear me? I'll grow wings whether you like it or not. I must have dragonfly wings!
The eyes blinked, off and on, like 1,000,000 tiny stars falling through the trees. Catchstraw scrambled to his feet.
I will be a thunder being! I can do anything!
Father? Father, do you hear me? Father, wake up!
Lambkill roused and blinked at the gloom of the brush lodge. The lean-to walls had gaps so wide that moonlight flooded the interior, shadowing the packs and haloing the bedding hides with a burning line of liquid silver.
What? Who called me?
I did. Father, I have something to tell you.
What is it, my son?
It hurt the boy to do as this human asked. What greater punishment could have been inflicted upon him? He wondered why the man had commanded him to tell Lambkill what he wanted to know.
Mother is on the sea coast near Pygmy Island. She is alive and well. And that witch I told you about, He is growing too arrogant for his own good. He's tired of running and flying in the bodies of animals. Now he wants to join the ranks of the Thunder Beings.
Lamkill sat up suddenly.
Does your mother know I'm following her?
She suspects, that's all. She can't believe that you would ever let her go.
And where is this witch I am to seek out?
In the foothills. Don't worry. Soon another traitor will tell you how to get there. He'll tell you that, and much more.
The boy's soul coiled into a tight spiral and lay restlessly in that dead body, watching the man he hated more than any other drift back to sleep. Kestrel lay curled behind Sunchaser on the rock, drifting in and out of tortured dreams. The temperature had dropped dramatically after sunset, and the night had a bitter bite. She'd tied a hide around Sunchaser's bare shoulders and rolled herself and Cloud Girl in another. Her daughter slept soundly at Kestrel's back, with her head pillowed on Helper's black tail. The dog had climbed up on the rock, shivering and wagging its tail pathetically. Kestrel had turned the Elkhide sideways so she could cover Helper as well as herself and her daughter. It meant that she had only her dress between the chill granite and her skin. Cold seeped up to nip at her, but not unbearably. She had been afraid to demolish Sunchaser's sweat lodge, fearing they might need it later tonight. Moonlit clouds sped across the sky like ghosts racing for cover. Behind them, a dark haze had gobbled up the glimmers of Mother Ocean.
That's not rain, is it?
The mammoth cow that lay at the base of the rock lifted her head. Her eyes glinted in the gloom. She flapped one ear. The little calf had moved farther out beyond the aspen grove, planting himself in a thick bed of ferns. The darkness outlined his auburn-haired body.
I'm sorry I woke you, Mother. You can go back to sleep. Sunchaser's still dreaming.
The cow used the tip of her trunk to reach the thick fringe of grass around the front of the rock, where she ripped up a handful, then put it in her mouth and chewed. With her toes, Kestrel pulled the bottom of the elk hide up and folded it under so that she could tuck her cold feet into the niche. As she closed her eyes, dreams flitted across her soul, images flaring and dying in a single instant.
Kestrel!
Kestrel heard Sunchaser calling her. His voice rang with such urgency that she thought he'd awakened. But when she sat up to stare at him, she found him still dreaming, his body silhouetted against the backdrop of green leaves and white tree trunks. His expressionless face, with its deep-set eyes, hadn't changed. Kestrel closed her eyes again.
Kestrel! Kestrel, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you!
Kestrel! Kestrel!
She followed his voice and found herself trotting along a narrow dirt path through a magnificent wind-sculpted land. An infinity of canyons cut this desert to ribbons, leaving red ridges and needles of orange sandstone to slice the brilliant blue of Brother Sky.
Kestrel!
An unnatural silence and heat gripped this place. Sweat ran down Kestrel's chest, trickling between her breasts. In the distance, jumbles of rounded rocks dotted the desert, like balls rolled into place and frozen by the gods.
Kestrel!
Sunchaser! Where are you? I can't see you!
Kestrel! Kestrel, I'm here! Over here!
She crested a low rise and plunged down the other side into a tangle of trails. She slid to a stop.
Kestrel!
Which direction should she take? She scrutinized the knot of pathways. They resembled a twined heap of unraveled yucca cord, strand dropped upon strand, looping off in every direction.
Where are you, Sunchaser? I'm at a trail crossing. I don't know which way to go.
I'm here! Here!
Kestrel ran back along the way she'd come, trying to find his tracks. Only her own moccasin prints showed on the sandy soil.
Kestrel? Kestrel! You'll never find Sunchaser if you stay on the trails. They're being witched. You have to fly above them. Tell Sunchaser he has to fly.
Kestrel spun around, scanning the rocks.
Who are you?
Run, Kestrel. Fly over the trails. Fly. You must fly!
I don't know how to fly. I'm not a dreamer.
Try. Try to fly. Go on, Kestrel. You can do it. Just spread your arms.
She turned, raced forward, and leaped over the chaos with her arms outstretched.
Kestrel! Kestrel!
When she sailed through the air, suspended above the tangle, she could clearly tell the direction from which Sunchaser's voice came. Joy filled her. She hit the dirt running, heading for an orange needle of sandstone that gleamed like fire on the eastern horizon. 100 trails crossed her path, but she refused to look at them. Her route cut through the twists and turns like an arrow, slicing the knot in two. And through some magic she did not understand, she seemed to be looking down on the desert from high above. As if following the root of a cat's cradle string woven between a child's fingers, she could make out the simple single strand that formed the basis of the chaos. It led to the heart of the maze, where the knot tied the two ends together. She sprinted forward at a headlong pace. A feeling of utter freedom possessed her. She no longer cared whether Lamkill would find her or not. Her husband didn't exist here. She felt as though she had stepped out of her own life and into someone else's. And this someone was happy. Buttes rose on either side of her, their blunt noses sniffing the belly of Brother Sky. Wind blew streamers of red sand from the crests and whipped them into spirals that curled upward into the sky.
Kestrel, can you hear me? Where are you?
I'm here, Sunchaser. I'm following the sound of your voice. Keep calling my name!
Kestrel! Kestrel! Kestrel!
A euphoric sense of purpose tingled along her limbs. For the first time in cycles, she knew why she was alive. She lived here now to help Sunchaser unravel the maze. He needed her.
I've escaped, Lamkill! You'll never find me! Never!
Kestrel! Kestrel!
Kestrel passed the central knot, her eyes focused solely on the orange spire, and trotted between two enormous ridges that rose like jagged rows of teeth on either side of her. They narrowed as they approached a deep, dark chasm.
Like the wing walls of a trap.
The sheer sandstone walls funneled over a cliff. The ethereal orange spire sat across the gap, floating on a bed of fluffy clouds. Kestrel slid to a halt so fast that she stumbled backward and fell to the ground, breathing hard. Between the precipice and the spire lay nothing. Nothing but darkness.
Sunchaser! Sunchaser, where are you?
Call me, Kestrel! Please keep calling me!
Sunchaser! I'm here! Up on the cliff! Sunchaser! Sunchaser! Sunchaser!
Kestrel awoke with a start. Clouds had rolled in and eaten the star people. Tiny flakes of snow were drifting out of the black. The aspen limbs bore a white coating half a hand thick, as did the hide that covered Kestrel and Cloud Girl. Helper sat beside Sunchaser, his ears pricked. Kestrel didn't understand until she heard Sunchaser gasp and saw him fall sideways, crumpling like a water bladder punctured with a quill. Helper lurched out of the way and dove off the rock to slide through the snow on his chin.
Sunchaser!
Kestrel slipped her left arm beneath his head so he wouldn't bash his skull on the granite. His shoulder struck hard. Weakly, he flopped over onto his back. Kestrel sat up.
Sunchaser! Sunchaser!
Kestrel!
Sunchaser, it's snowing. We have to get into the sweat lodge before we freeze to death.
She slid off the rock, pulled the elk hide up over Cloud Girl's face to shield her from the snow, and ran around to the front to help Sunchaser. The mammoth rose, her eyes wide.
He's all right, Mother. He's come back to us.
But the cow watched intently as Kestrel helped Sunchaser sit up. Sunchaser sluggishly swung his legs over the rock's edge and fell into Kestrel's arms. She staggered but managed to hold him up.
Kestrel, wait. Give me just a bit more time.
Sunchaser turned and held the mammoth cow's forlorn gaze for several moments before he reached out with a trembling hand. The cow lifted her trunk and touched Sunchaser's fingers lovingly. She curled the tip of her trunk around his wrist, holding it tight.
Sunchaser, you're as cold as ice. I have to get you inside the sweat lodge.
Just a little longer.
He bent his hand so that he could cup it around the cow's trunk, then raised his other hand to gently stroke her. Finally, Sunchaser let go of the cow's trunk.
Sunchaser, I can't hold you up by myself.
They both fell to the ground and rolled in the snow.
Sunchaser, are you all right?
I can reach the lodge by myself. Gather the hides.
Yes, go on. I'll hurry.
Kestrel climbed back up onto the rock, threw one hide over her shoulders, and wrapped Cloud Girl in the other. The baby peered at her gravely, her eyes slitted, mouth pinched. Kestrel carefully eased her way over the slick rock to the ground. By the time she ducked into the cramped sweat lodge, Sunchaser lay on his side in the rear. She took the hide from around Cloud Girl and put it over him. Then she set Cloud Girl down at Sunchaser's feet. Kestrel dug through her pack and found some fire sticks. Before she even attempted to generate a spark, she felt the roof for the place where the hides overlapped and shoved one slightly to the side, making a smoke hole. A few snowflakes sneaked through. By feel, she placed her sticks and began to spin the hard wood between her palms. The thought kept going through her head that if power really wanted to help people, it would find a way of generating fire at a snap of the fingers. When she finally had a good blaze going, Helper poked his black nose around the door flap.
Come in, Helper. There's room for you.
The dog ducked beneath the hanging, spied Cloud Girl, and went to flop down at the foot of her rabbit fur sack. He kept his gaze riveted on Kestrel, his dark eyes wide and worried.
Sunchaser's all right, Helper. Really, he...
But when she turned, she found Sunchaser shivering uncontrollably. He'd rolled to his back and crossed his muscular arms over his chest. His handsome face was twisted with agony. His long legs stuck out beneath the hide from the knees down.
Sunchaser?
Freezing.
Kestrel piled more wood on the fire, then rearranged the elk hide. But it didn't seem to ease his tremors.
Oh, you were out in the cold for so long. It will probably take two or three hands of time for you to get really warm. After I floated across Big Spoonwood River, I thought I'd never be warm again.
Sunchaser's stiff fingers clutched desperately at the hide that covered him. His black eyes fluttered open and closed, as though he were half-conscious and fading fast. When she could see his pupils, she saw that they looked dull and glazed.
Oh, I'm getting under that hide with you, Sunchaser. Do you hear me? I've got to warm you up fast, and I know of only one way.
Kestrel slipped her dress over her head and spread it out over Helper. Naked, frightened, she crawled beneath the hide and covered Sunchaser with her body. Cold bumps prickled his skin. The feel of her flesh against his, he wrapped his arms around her back and hugged her so tight that she could barely breathe.
Thank you, Kestrel, for coming to find me. I was lost. I couldn't have found my way out of that darkness without you. I had gotten turned around and so confused that that's when I started calling to you. I prayed that you'd be able to follow my voice and that together we would backtrack on your trail to find this world again.
Kestrel rested her forehead against his cold cheek and stroked his hair gently.
I thought it was a dream.
It was a real dream. You were on the trail that leads to the land of the dead.
Sleep now, Sunchaser. You're home. You're safe.
Safe. Safe.
A hand of time passed before his shivering subsided and his muscles relaxed. With every breath he took, his arms slid down a little more until they rested at his sides. Kestrel stared at the flames. The tiny lodge had warmed quickly, but she would have to awaken often during the night to add more wood to the fire. If she didn't, they would all be frozen by morning. Sunchaser's head lolled to the side, and he fell into a deep sleep. His handsome face looked peaceful. Kestrel tightened her hold on him, trying to memorize the sensation of his body against hers, the way his white hair tangled with her black hair, the warmth of his skin. Deep inside her, a terrible ache grew.
I'm glad you're back, Sunchaser.
She closed her eyes and tried to sleep. Sunchaser awoke in the middle of the night when Kestrel rose to throw wood on the fire. He lay still, watching the red glow on the back of his closed eyelids, feeling her careful movements and her return to him. her full breasts pressed warmly into his chest. Her thighs rested against his. He tried to stop the hot flush that ran like fire through his veins, but he couldn't. His physical responses surprised him. First, his heart thundered, then he broke out in a sweat, and finally, against his will, his body began to respond to her closeness. He opened his eyes and found her peering at him worriedly. Her long hair fell about him in a silken curtain.
Kestrel, I...
Are you sure you want this to happen, Sanjacer?
I'm not sure of anything anymore.
But it will endanger your dreaming, won't it?
Perhaps it was because he felt so tired and helpless, or because he loved her. A pain tore at his chest, like sharp talons ripping at his soul. The loneliness swelled until it blotted out every other emotion. He needed her more desperately than he had ever needed anything in his life. She had braved the land of the dead to come to him when he'd called her. She had warmed him with her body when he'd been freezing. Mammoth above had guided her to him. His gaze caressed the bluish glints of her hair, the smooth lines of her face, the silken, bare skin of her shoulder against his.
Yes, probably will, but...
He slipped a hand beneath the wealth of her hair. He pulled her face down so he could kiss her gently.
I love you, Sunchaser, but I don't want to hurt you. The last man who loved me is dead, and I...
That wasn't your fault. No more than this is.
Sunchaser put an arm around her shoulders and rolled her over onto her back. He stared down at her. He tenderly smoothed a hand down her bare side. In his eyes, she saw desire and the reflection of her own certainty that this should never happen. Lambkill had taken the lead, and now he ran three body lengths ahead, his gray braid lashing the back of his soiled buckskin shirt like a whip, driving him ever onward. Rolling green hills rose to the east, where Dawnchild's golden glow had just touched the tops of the tallest fir trees. To the west, the ocean barely moved. Waves purled softly as they caressed the shore. Tannin concentrated on his feet. Lambkill had been pushing him hard. They had eaten little yesterday and slept less. They had run through the snow until they'd hit a rocky section of shoreline, where they'd kept tripping and stumbling. Lambkill had reluctantly agreed to stop. Still, Tannin had barely two hands of rest last night. Then Lambkill had awakened him long before sunrise. They'd rolled their bedding hides in silence and trotted through the luminous gray world of pre-dawn. Snow had coated the beach, but stars had gleamed over their heads. Tannin's stomach growled. The hunger took a toll on his strength. He trotted faster, catching up with his brother, but Lambkill didn't even glance over at him. He kept his eyes squinted at the curving shoreline, like a wolf on a fresh blood trail.
Lambkill, let's stop and eat. I'm sure the tidal pools are brimming with snails, maybe even a few abalones.
You're weak, my brother. You used to be able to run for days on an empty stomach.
I'm not as young as I used to be, Lambkill.
We'll stop at that village just over the rise. Someone will offer us food, and we'll learn where we are.
What village?
Tannin shielded his eyes and searched the distance.
It's there. Believe me. See the tops of those scrubby aspen trees? Near there.
Lambkill picked up the pace, forcing Tannin to run with all his might. When they veered around the base of the rise, the village came into view. Tannin glanced at Lambkill, amazed.
How did you know it would be here?
Simple, brother. Nighthawk said that Whalebeard Village sat exactly 3 days south of the old Otterclan village. I assumed that Nighthawk meant at a traitor's pace. That's why I've been pushing you. I knew that if we ran hard, we could reach it in half that time.
Tannin looked at the village. 15 hide lodges sat in a semicircle at the base of a low hill, facing the sea. 3 women stood near cook fires, and a few children played at the edge of the water, but only 4 men lounged on the sand in the plaza. It looked as if they played a shell game, for the man in the center had 3 clamshells laid out in a line. No laughter carried, nor any strains of conversation, or the happy shrieks of children. Tannen glanced at Lamkill.
This is a somber village, brother. You think they'll know something about Kestrel?
We shall see.
When the men in the plaza saw them pounding through the surf, they rose and spoke to one another. One man, short and wearing a frayed, soot-stained bearhide coat, ran toward them, waving his arms.
Go back! Don't come any closer! We have sickness in this village!
Lamkill grabbed Tannen's sleeve and brought them both to a dead halt at the edge of the waves. The short man walked to within 40 hands of them and slowed, his hands held up to stop them. He had an elderly face and white braids.
Thank you for warning us! We're looking for a woman!
What woman?
Her name is Kestrel! She's my wife! Young, very pretty! She's traveling with a newborn baby!
Yes, we have heard of you. You're the marsh country trader, aren't you?
I am! Have you seen my wife?
No.
Have you seen any men from the Blackwater Draw Clan? We're supposed to meet them somewhere near here.
You mean Harrier and his brothers?
Yes! That's them! Are they here?
No. They came through many days ago, looking for the Otter Clan.
Ah! We are also looking for the Otter Clan. Where is their new village, do you know?
In the foothills, 2 days' walk to the east. Some of our hunters went through their village only days ago. Turn around and go back to the other side of the rise. You'll see a trail that winds up through the hills. Their new village is on that trail. You won't be able to miss it.
Thank you!
Lamkill started to back away.
Wait, please! Have you seen Sun Chaser? Or heard of where he is? We need him desperately. We've sent word up and down the trails, but no one has seen him. Have you heard anything?
No! We've heard nothing!
If you happen to meet Sun Chaser, please tell him that we need him.
Tannen nodded and backed up 2 paces.
Everyone thinks they need him.